Hello and a very warm welcome to episode 19 of season 2 of the Golf Shake podcast. Regular listeners will know that Matt is away on holiday this week, so I've enlisted the services of our man from the north. North of the border, Kieran, aren't you? Yeah, and you're in the beautiful Kingdom of Fife right now. So what's it like up there at the moment?
It is glorious, as always. The sun is shining.
We've had some weather this week, haven't we? It's been pretty good.
Yes, we've had a little hint of summer. In fact, actually, a week ago, I even dug out a pair of shorts, which is also a risky strategy. Had them out for 2 days. I'm afraid they had to go back into the wardrobe after a couple of days, but which is kind of regrettable because I kind of believe that when you dig out the shorts, you have to commit to it, and that is it for the rest of the summer.
I mean, we had some guys playing on Saturday in our medal with jumpers, jackets, woolly hat, shorts. Wonderful.
I suppose that's kind of the outdoor version of smart casual.
It was in the morning, though, so that's our first tee time on a Saturday. And yes, people do play at 6:32 on a Saturday morning. What is wrong with them? But yes, they do. But yeah, I mean, it has to be said, later on in the day, it was actually the sort of weather that shorts were more than permissible.
So what you're saying is your bold gentlemen that morning were actually wearing very adaptable outfits for any conditions. They were ready for anything to happen.
Well, I think their legs would have been pretty cold for the majority, but yeah, I mean,
depends how hairy they are. I mean, some people have very hairy legs, so I mean, I'm not sure if the members at Howley Hall wax their legs regularly, but if they don't, then
I've never asked, Kieran. Strangely enough, but yeah, who knows. So, I mean, it's a while since you've been on, Kieran.
It has.
Was it back in January last time you were on the podcast?
It was so long ago, I can't even remember. And I can't believe that you're now on episode 19. And, of course, stepping into, you know, Matt's, you know, very large shoes is obviously daunting. And when I say large shoes, I mean that literally. Have you ever seen his feet? They're massive. So stepping into his shoes are very, you know, I'm size 11 and a half, so my feet are pretty big. but stepping into Mr. Holbrook's position here as your intrepid co-host is obviously daunting. But we've got a lot to talk about because obviously this week it's the second men's major of the year, and I think that is very exciting. But before we get to that, Ryan, we have to talk about you because – You told me before we come onto the air today that you were actually, and very rare for a PGA professional, especially a head pro at a very prestigious golf club, very rare for you to actually play some golf, and you played at one of the premier golf courses in the middle of England.
I did indeed. I played at the wonderful Notts Golf Club, or Hollingwell as it's better known, and it's the first time I'd visited and was, yeah, very, very impressed, to be honest, Kieran. What a golf course it is. We had a lovely day, it has to be said. It's been sunny all day, really, both in Yorkshire and in the Midlands when we were down at Hollingwell. Mm-hmm. A little bit of wind around, a little bit sort of cool breeze, really, to start with, but it was ideal golfing weather, and the course was very good. I mean, for those of you that have played Hollingwell know what I'm talking about. Those of you that haven't, it's a very, very good golf course. Lots of it's quite undulating in places, really. So you kind of sort of work your way up to the top of the hill and then back down again for the back nine, really. But there are some nice changes in elevation. There's some nice sort of greens tucked away, and the rough was pretty severe today as well, to be honest. It was, you know, that kind that you generally get on sort of heathland courses where it doesn't look much, but it really does cause you a hell of a lot of problems. And it was very much like that today. There was, you know, certainly a premium on hitting the fairways. And on the whole, I didn't do too bad today. I think I was about 3 over par, which wasn't too bad, considering, you know, I've not really played a lot of golf. It was a TGI, basically like a get-together sort of day with suppliers and some of the sort of marketing people from different brands were there as well. So I got the chance to take a guest myself. So I took our club captain, Jamie, who absolutely loved it. And I also played with content editor for TGI, a guy called Matt Millard, and also Simon Gilbert, who works in marketing for TaylorMade as well. So it was quite a nice four ball, really, guys that I've met before, but not really spent a lot of time with, but it was great to play a game of golf with them and get out on a stunning golf course. So yeah, I've had a great day.
Oh, you're such a smooth mixer, aren't you, with people? You know, that's what you are. You're smoothie. Job, you're smoothie, really. Well, that's what. Yes, I guess so. I guess that's part of the job, isn't it? Because that's the thing about golf, isn't it? I mean, we're all playing golf with each other, and you know, building up relationships and all the rest of it. And, you know, there's a lot of what I call spongers in golf. And
there's a lot of that going on. Yeah, plenty.
Yeah. No comment any further. Naming no names. I've got to say that I am very anti-sponge. So I'm kind of the antithesis of the average golf industry person.
It's a great opportunity for me to speak to, you know, some of the suppliers that I have myself at the shop, but also some of their bosses, I suppose, as well. So you kind of get to speak to guys further up the chain and, you know, maybe have a chat about different opportunities you might be able to do. You know, I had a couple of great chats with some guys sat around the table today. So hopefully some content for Golf Shake is going to come of that. It's certainly very promising. One of which was up there in St. Andrews, actually, with Travis Matthews. So hopefully we're going to do something in the store that they've got there behind the 18th green and have a bit of a look at their stuff. So yeah, that sounded really, really good. But yeah, I mean, it was just a great day. There was just about 100 people, I think, played in the golf day. So it was busy. And they were all treated to a fantastic day's golf, really. So it was a shotgun, 9 o'clock this morning. We had a sandwich and coffee before we played, 2-course lunch afterwards. It was absolutely brilliant. And we actually came seventh as well. So that was pretty good. So we got a little prize for that, which was pretty good. And one of my guys won nearest the pin as well, which was a brand new Spyder GTX putter. So £300 worth of putter.
That's not bad at all, is it? Yeah. See, what a life you lead.
I know. Wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah.
So before we get into the USPGA, which is obviously going to be our main topic of conversation for today, let's talk a little bit about this week's golf. Yeah, so what's happened?
Or last week's golf.
Last week's golf. Yeah, in the last 7 days. But before we do that, talk to me a little bit about your forays onto the golf course in the last couple of months.
Well, my forays have been relatively infrequent, as they typically are, I'm afraid. But I did have an opportunity about 6 weeks ago to play with the regular co-host, Matt Holbrook, who made an unbelievable journey up to St. Andrews overnight to play the old course. A 25-hour day, as it turned out for him in the end, there and back. The man's just a madman.
That is commitment.
It's commitment, but I mean, as we kind of agreed ourselves, I suppose, you know what, though? I think, you know, the best experiences are worth pushing the boat out for, and he certainly did there. So we had a little kind of golf shake, sort of, kind of informal get-together, playing the old course a couple of times, playing the new course as well, just at the end of March, which was fabulous, in very kind of mixed conditions. It was at times very nice, and then other times absolutely horrendous, but that's kind of the time of year. And then I had a little round of golf myself four weeks ago now, actually, on the old course again. I played the old course 3 times this year so far, which isn't too bad. And with some kind of contacts I have from the States who came over, and it was nice to meet them and to spend a day with them, and a wonderful day in the golf course, glorious conditions. The course is fabulous, and it was just a really enjoyable day. And actually, I played with someone. I'd never done this before. Played with a guy who actually played a full set of hickory clubs.
Oh, wow.
Which was really, really fascinating, right? So he turned up with the flat cap on and the plus fours and all that kind of stuff, which I'm not particularly impressed about, but I was impressed by the actual clubs. And they were, for the most part, originals from the 1920s. Wow. I think he had a couple of replicas in there, but most of the bag was actually clubs from a place called Leven, just down the road from here.
Yeah, yeah.
They were built, made 100 years ago, and he had these clubs. And watching him play, we play with the forward tees and the old, so about kind of 6,100 yards for him there. And it was just fascinating to watch. I mean, he's very skilled at it. He's going to come back later in the year for the World Hickory Championship, which is down at Prestwick, I think, this September.
Is it, yeah?
Yeah, wow. But it was fascinating to watch the way the game's played, Ryan, with those vintage clubs and the old balls, and how, you know, there's so much finesse involved in it, and touch and feel, and just watching them shape the ball, you know, all the time.
I think I would be absolutely clueless trying to do that.
It's a completely different game, and it was fascinating to watch. You kind of, I think what you recognise is, you know, the misses are obviously more extreme, and he hit some shots that obviously were very damaging, as can happen. But when he was playing well, it was really fascinating to watch, and it really gave you an appreciation for just, and I've always kind of said this, you know, how good the players were back in the day. when you think the scores that the guy shot back in, you know, the 1920s and beyond and before that as well, with the equipment they had on the courses they were playing, the conditions of the courses, on with the gear that they were wearing, these guys very skilled.
I mean, that always gets me when you watch, you know, some films that have been made, obviously, with set around that sort of period, and they've got like almost like a three-piece tweed suit on, which was literally impossible to see.
How do they move? It's unbelievable. When you compare it now to the performance gear we all wear today, clothes that are scientifically engineered to give you the best chance of playing well, and these guys are walking about dressed up like your granddad, you know, from 1950. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
And and you think the scores that they shot back in the day, and obviously it's a very different game now, and you know the great players of today would still be the great players of yesteryear. But I think what you realize is these guys were so skilled with their hands. They must have had amazing touch and feel to get through it. And yeah, I mean, it gives you a great appreciation for how good they actually were. And we're talking that day about how it was 1897, the first guy to break 70 around the old course. It was a guy called Freddie Tate, who was an amateur champion, you know, a great player, and he shot 69 around the old in 1897. And the old course back then was probably playing around maybe 6-3 on the scorecard. And you think, that is unbelievable. with the equipment he had, and I say, you know, the golf course obviously was not anywhere near immaculate. So to kind of
that's the best score I've shot around it with modern equipment, and it was black calm, literally the easiest day you will ever play the old course in its existence, let me tell you.
So obviously, Ryan, you would obviously smoke me every day in the golf course, but I think old Freddie Tate, I mean, I think he'd have your lunch around there.
You're absolutely right.
If you give him the gear of today. But yeah, amazing stuff. So to kind of share it with them and see the golf played in that way was something I'd never experienced before, kind of close up and firsthand. Really interesting. And it was a very enjoyable day and great weather, as we often get here, contrary to popular belief. And although we did have one moment where the Har descended from the North Sea.
Oh, really?
The sea mist came in and it completely changed the climate for about 45 minutes, where it was like you can only see about 150 yards in front of you. But thankfully,
I've been up there a lot, you know, and it's generally been quite decent weather.
Yes.
Most of the times when I've been over. I mean, I can remember one pretty horrible day, but other than that, I think it's generally been sort of kind of what you would expect up there, do you know what I mean? Quite windy, but nice. Do you know?
I mean, generally speaking, I think if you come here on the East Coast and you come for a few days, the chances of it being a complete washout are almost non-existent. It can be windy, it can be cold, but I think quite often you get away with it. So the climate here, it's not always as bad as some people pretend it is, I'm afraid. I mean, I always kind of wonder that when people come in the... We talk about the weather, and they always, when it's a nice day, they'll say something like, oh, you must be amazed by this, seeing the sun and all that. And you sort of think, where do you actually live? Do you live at the equator, perhaps? Why are you dressed up?
It's maybe seen your legs in those shorts, Kieran, that they haven't seen daylight, for God knows.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you a story. This is way back in the day. I was traveling on the world's only remaining seagoing paddle steamer called the PS Waverley back in the when I was about 14 years old, and I was wearing shorts, and this old geezer said to me, son, you've got great legs for a kilt. You know, and now looking back at that, I think, well, you know, that's probably a bit dodgy. But now at the time, I thought, oh, thank you very much. So there you go. I've got great legs for a kilt and a pair of shorts.
Obviously.
Yeah. Right, so moving swiftly on, Ryan, yes.
Let's talk about the world of professional golf.
Yes.
Okay, so last week, the DP World Tour was in Belgium for the Soudal Open.
Yes.
Simon Frostrom won 17 under, Jens Dantorp second, and Torbjørn Olesen in there at third. So did you manage to catch any of this, Kieran? Did you watch any of the golf? I mean, it was good to see him back in Europe, for starters. I mean, they've been in the Far East for a few weeks before that. And I suppose for me watching, it was great to see. Obviously, it was an awesome win by Simon Forstrom, but yep. My mind is always in a Ryder Cup year on who's going to make the team. And for me, Torbjørn Olesen's performance was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I thought at the start of the week, he was easily probably the best guy, the best player that was in the field anyway. And I expected him to pretty much be up there. But, you know, I mean, to say that is one thing, but to deliver it is another. And you know, is the Ryder Cup something you've been thinking about already?
Of course. And especially, obviously, you know, given the events in the game and how things will change in the team, which they may have done organically, regardless of Liv and all the rest of it. And again, Alisson obviously was someone who was in the Ryder Cup in Paris in 2018, obviously had some well-documented issues off the golf course that affected him there for a while as well. But since last year, he's come back playing some very good golf, and you kind of remember how good he actually was, 5-6 years ago to get onto that team in the first place.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember him playing, and they kind of left him out for a few of the sessions, and then he took Spieth down, didn't he, in the singles.
On the last day, yeah.
Yeah, it was absolutely awesome. So, yeah.
So definitely someone who can be part of the team this year. And I think you look at the makeup of the European team, obviously we kind of know the bulk of the team, who they're going to be one way or the other, whether they qualify or whether they're picked. But there is probably one or two spots for these guys playing on the DP World Tour regularly to actually break in there if they can put together sort of two or three wins in the season. And he didn't win, obviously, at the weekend, but certainly a very solid finish, and it kind of sets him up for, obviously, a decent spell of golf now back into Europe, some of the more established events, golf courses that he's probably played before, and bigger purses as well. And that obviously means more points and a more chance of making a move up the rankings. So, Torbjørn Olsen is definitely on that list. And aside from him, Ryan, I mean, I think we're always kind of looking at, obviously, in Belgium, obviously, there was no Thomas Peters, obviously now playing in Live Golf, but Thomas Dietrich was obviously kind of the next Belgian player. Indeed, he hasn't won, which is unbelievable to me, anywhere.
Absolutely great. Yeah, me too, because he's so talented, isn't he?
He's so good, and he's playing really well in America as well. He came back for this event, and he was right there going into the last day and had a disappointing final round. He still finished in the top 10, but just didn't happen for him. And, who knows why he hasn't quite been able to make that final step. Obviously, it happens later for some players than others, but there's no doubt that ability-wise, he is absolutely capable of being someone who could be, like Torbjørn Olsen, pushing for a Ryder Cup spot. He's definitely that good, but he has to get the results to back it up, and he hasn't had that yet. But in terms of Simon Forsstrom, Ryan, he's someone who's interesting because obviously he's waited a long time to get this moment. I think he's 34 years of age. It's been a long time to get to this point in his career. And actually, he won on the Challenge Tour, and his win on the Challenge Tour was also in Belgium. So he seems to like playing there. So he obviously fulfilled that again this week. So great for him. Opens up all the doors and all the rest of it. And really a new name, I would suspect, for most people. He hasn't really been on the television screens or being on the main tour until the last couple of years. And even then, he hasn't really threatened too much until this massive victory. And guys win on the PGA Tour and they earn big money, or they win on LIV, big money. That's fantastic. But I think we see guys like Simon Forsstrom, a win like this is, a life changer in every conceivable way.
Yeah. Massive. And well done. I mean, to win any event is tough, but on the DP World Tour, it's even harder, particularly when you've graduated from the Challenge Tour and kind of almost a bit of a journeyman at 34 years old.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I don't think he would take too kindly to that. But I mean, getting your win there, and who knows what can happen from there. But I mean, looking down the leaderboard, for me personally, the names that jump out at me, people like Daniel Bradbury, who another top 10, another local lad to me, and Marcus Armitage had a decent finish again, 8 under par, and just racking up some points. And it's those guys who are just trying to keep their cards and trying to win as much money as possible. I see. Actually, tomorrow the US Open qualifying is down at Walton Heath as well. So it'd be great to see either or both or all three with Daniel Gavin to qualify for the US Open and get across there. But fingers crossed for those boys.
Well, the thing is, Ryan, it's quickly on that, because people have always said to me that one of the great days of golf to go and watch, if you can, as a spectator, is actually the US Open qualifying at Walton Heath, because you can go there. It's free of charge, sort of walk almost inside the ropes, if you like. There are no ropes, effectively. And you can get up close with some of these fantastic players and see guys, grinding to try and get, a rare spot in the US Open now, which is obviously, that could be a life-changing event for one of those guys. So look at
Michael Campbell did back in the day. Actually qualified 2 years ago. And when Rahm won the US Open, he qualified and played there. So it was wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. When he won the US Open in 2005, he came through the qualifier at Walton Heath and went on to win at Pinehurst. So you never know. I mean, if you get you can't you get into the field, you've also got a chance of a real life changing week. So, and again, in terms of getting to US Open, that's obviously an experience, and it's playing against top players in the world, and the big atmosphere, the big occasion, the big stage. And I guess, for any golfer, whatever level you are, playing in a major championship, that is the dream. And for guys, tomorrow, that could become a reality.
Absolutely. And going back on, you were saying just then about experience and top players in the world, when we head over the other side of the pond at the AT&T Byron Nelson, Jason Day jumping to the top of the leaderboard as well. It was great to see him win. I can't believe it's been nearly 5 years since the last time he won a title over there. It's unthinkable that someone as good as that can go that long. I mean, he's looked like, probably in the last 6-8 months, looked closer to his old self again, and he put some good performances in. Obviously, former world number one, very, very good golfer in his own right, and someone that, you could see kicking on from here, really, and I hope he does, because he's a great player to have in the game, and a great player to have at the top of the game, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember when he was at his peak in 2015, when he got to number one in the world and he won the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits. At that time, he almost had like a big three of him. Jordan Spieth had that fantastic 2015 when he almost won basically all the majors. And Rory McIlroy, of course, coming out, he was the world number one the previous year. And they were kind of being seen as being the next big three in golf, but it never quite materialized for any of them. They all kind of fell away to varying degrees after that. And obviously, Spieth came back and won the Open at Birkdale. Day obviously fell away entirely, and Rory McIlroy's always kind of been there, but obviously hasn't won a major in that period. So, but Jason Day, as you say, Ryan, he has been playing really well lately. He's done some fantastic work with Chris Cuomo, who's his swing coach. He's obsessed with the swing because he's had a lot of physical problems with his back. So him and Cuomo, their whole deal has been for the past couple of years to get Jason Day playing again, but get him playing healthily, where he's not going to be in pain, where his swing's not going to be impairing his physique, and he's not going to be hurting himself by playing regularly. Basically freeing him up to practice and play, because previously, for a couple of years there, he was just turning up the tournaments, not playing practice rounds, not really spending time in the range because he couldn't spend that time, his body couldn't take it. But now he has a technique that's now easier on his body. He's got his back fixed. And as you say, he's now showing what a good player he was. And I still think Jason Day, at his best, is still potentially a top five player in the world. He's certainly a threat to, the likes of Rahm and Scheffler. He's maybe not going to be week to week as good as those guys are right now. But coming to a week like this one coming up at the PGA, he is absolutely a major threat. And I like Jason Day. I think he's a very thoughtful character. He's a hard worker. He's got a fascinating kind of life story, a lot of hurdles to get to where he's got to now. And he's obviously been massively successful. And I still think there's going to be some very good days ahead.
Yeah, me too. No pun intended, obviously.
Of course. But
another good performance from Siwoo Kim. Scheffler as well up there again. Literally just seems like the easiest game in the world to him at the moment. And to be honest, didn't look like he putted particularly well.
No, he didn't, especially the first couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, it just looked like he was almost in fourth gear and just easy peasy for him, but just didn't hole anything. So, I mean, tee to green, he just looks imperious a lot of the time. But it's crazy. I mean, watching him when he was winning, a pretty fast clip last year, he just literally never seemed to miss a putt. So it was, particularly when he won the Masters. I mean, he held some serious footage of putts around there, didn't he? But I think this week it's a course that looks like it's going to play long. So, he's obviously a pretty big hitter as well. But it was good to see the likes of Hatton and Adam Scott as well perform well last week. And certainly Adam Scott seems to be, again, almost similar to Jason Day, kind of finding his form and kind of climbing back up the rankings again. But yeah, I mean, great, great tournament. Byron Nelson's always a good one. I know Spieth missed as well, which I think he'll be pretty gutted about not playing there, because it's an event that he quite likes to play in. Obviously, it's in Texas, isn't it? So,
It was the event where he actually made his tour debut when he was only 16.
Yeah.
Back in 2010, which was actually the year that Jason Day won it for the first time. So there's kind of a mirror between those two. yes, with that particular event where Jason Day's first tour win was different golf course, I think, but it was in that tournament 13 years ago, and now 13 years later, he's back and he's got his win again. But yes, Spieth obviously kind of injury questions there going into the PGA as well. Well, of course, he'll be going for the career Grand Slam with all four majors. But yeah, I mean, you talk about guys coming out of this week going into this coming week. You Adam Scott, Tyrrell Hatton, obviously two unbelievably good iron players. And I think that's going to be a huge key coming up at Oak Hill this week with those kind of Donald Ross style greens, with the kind of upturn greens with the bunkers all around them.
Yeah.
And they're very quick and kind of undulating. So, you know, the good iron players, I think, will do really well this coming week. Just look at the guy that won it 10 years ago there, you know, Jason Duffner, at that time was arguably the best kind of, you know, approach player in the game at that point. And I think that's the kind of player who will do well this week. And with Hatton and Adam Scott and Jason Day playing well there, I think those three guys, you know, certainly tick that box when it comes to, you know, hitting good iron shots. And I think Jason Day, the way he finished that off with the great up and down at the last to kind of make that birdie on the par five was fabulous. And yeah, I think those all these players coming out of that week will look really good. But like you say with Scotty Scheffler, Lowe Ryan, it's like he's someone who he's just so good and he makes it so look so easy. You almost forget how good he actually is at times until you see his scores.
Indeed.
And that to me is probably the most dangerous player you can think of right now.
Indeed. And before we get on to the PGA, the LPGA was playing this week as well. So they were at the Cognizant Founders Cup. Yep. Jin Young Ko winning in a playoff. It seems to be a playoff every week on the LPGA at the moment.
Yes.
But yeah, it, again, another great win. I think it's the, is it the third time she's won this event? And back to back as well, which is, you know, very, very impressive. 13 under par. Minji Lee, who she beat in the playoff there. Yeah, I mean, I must say I didn't see any of this other than the fact that Jin Young Ko won, and she was my pick last week. I'm not going to lie, but it's, but yeah, Matt'll probably call me an aftertimer for saying this, but she was definitely I thought she was going to win, having won there before. Not only last year, but also previous to that as well. It seemed like she was probably the obvious choice. But it's what, again, like I said before, it's one thing having that over your head and another thing going and doing it, isn't it? And, you know, I think she started four strokes back and sort of clawed her way back to Minji Lee. And obviously in the playoff, ultimately, it only took her one hole to win the title. But, yeah, another great performance. And, yeah, I think I may be wrong here. Maybe 14 or 15 times she's won now on the
LPGA. It's 15, yeah, on the LPGA Tour. And actually, Ryan, on Yin Young Ko, you know, I remember before the pandemic, she was by far the world's best player. She won two majors in 2019. And then the pandemic hit. She was stuck away back in Korea, didn't play much for a year. And it was a shame because her stats at that time were just unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, scoring stats, rounds in the 60s, performance stats, fairways, greens, everything was just, she was the best player in almost every category. It was just stratospheric. And, you know, since then, it's been a bit of a, you know, relatively inconsistent return. There's been some injuries in there as well. But now she's, you know, back in great form and coming into, talk about the men's major this week, but going into the women's majors coming up, you get the women's PGA championship coming up next month. And then you got the real blockbuster US Women's Open at Pebble Beach in the beginning of July, which is going to be just, you know, one of the biggest women's majors of all time. And going into that, you know, she is already going to be one of the big favorites. And, you know, Minji Lee, obviously, as well, you know, as a player with just so much ability. And it's no surprise to see those two, you know, up there this week. You know, an event that kind of harkens back to the foundation of the LPGA Tour and the 13 women who established it, you know, back in the day. And it pays tribute to them. And I think those women, you know, most of them sadly are no longer with us. But I think if they saw the LPGA Tour now, with the money that the players are playing for, the number of events that they're playing for, you know, the tour has shown a remarkable degree of resilience, I think, in the difficulties that it had just over a decade ago, which really was struggling kind of the end of the sort of early 2000s. The money was going down, the events were going down. But in the last 10 years, it's really got stronger. And despite the impact of the pandemic, it's come out of it quite well. And the women's majors now are real appointment viewing. So I'm really looking forward to the Women's Open at Pebble Beach. I think that's going to be just an amazing event.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful part of America to visit, let alone play golf in. And yeah, it is a fantastic, fantastic venue for any golf tournament, let alone a major. So yeah, we look forward to that as well.
Yes.
So yes, that's last week out the way. Let's turn our attention now to the big one this week, the 105th PGA Championship at Oak Hill. I mean, I can remember the last two times that it's been there. And like you alluded to before with Duffner, it has thrown up some surprise winners. And to be honest, the PGA in general does, doesn't it? I mean, there's been some guys that, I mean, it'd be good to, I don't think I could roll off the winners of the PGA Championship in the last 20 years, probably.
I could certainly try.
Yeah, I would try. I mean, one that jumps to mind would be Wai Yang that won, obviously. And
when that was, by the way. Yeah, beat Tiger Woods.
Yes, he did indeed. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Duffner, Sean McKeel, who won there.
Rich Beam. He's a great beamer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That would have been around the same time, was it?
It was 2002 he won that.
2002, Hazel team, yeah.
I guess, Ryan, you see it, but all the majors, though, I mean, they've all had surprise winners and unexpected winners. But again, people say that. And I think it kind of, to me, if you're in the feel of a major championship, you are an unbelievable golfer.
Absolutely.
And to me, you know, those guys, I mean, while yes, they may have not done it, you know, beyond that one win they had, that great moment they had, but when you think about it, they dealt with the ultimate pressure, the ultimate scenario, without any real experience of being in that situation before. And you know, that's why I think the wins for guys like McKeel and Beam and Yang, I think they're actually part of the flavour of a major championship, much like, you know, Ben Curtis winning the Open or Todd Hamilton winning the Open or Larry Mize winning the Masters. To me, those guys are all part of the story. But I think the reason for the PGA Championship, Ryan, being kind of the, in some respects, kind of a democratic event in terms of the winners is because, one, the field's very strong. You have your 20 club pros. No offense to the club pros in this world.
It's arguably the strongest field in the majors, really, isn't it? I mean,
it's certainly the most top-heavy one. You always have the world's top 100 there. And you obviously have a lot of the guys out with that as well. And there's been a bit of kind of controversy about that coming into the week because the PGA of America don't actually publicize how they choose the field. They have a kind of their own little ranking system, a little point system that's kind of hush-hush, top secret. But it does always give them the top 100 players and, you know, a lot of other top players too. So you really have the kind of 120, 130 players who are all relatively close to the top of the game. And because of that, they're all potential winners. You know, whereas compared to the Masters, which is really just the elite players and guys who have no chance, there's no one in between. That's why they have kind of the manufactured great winners every single year almost. And obviously the Opens are, you know, open by definition, I think, are interesting for that reason. Particularly, US Open is the most open of the two. But the PGA is a closed shop, but they do ensure that the field's very strong. And again, they don't really trick up the golf courses in this event at all, Ryan, either. So it's not like a US Open typically where it can be a little bit gimmicky, a little bit contrived, a little bit over the top. It's more or less of a very fair test out for the players, which isn't too dissimilar to some of the more upmarket PGA Tour events, like a Memorial or an Arnold Palmer. They kind of feel like a PGA Championship sort of thing. So while the PGA, I would say, and I'm not going to put words into your mouth here, but I can't imagine it's your favourite major to watch.
But
it's still pretty good.
Before, it's the fourth favourite, I would have said, but yes, it's still
that's
a major.
Still pretty good, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. No, it's very good. I mean, it's one that you still, you know, regardless of whether you like where it's at or I mean, I think it's always been obviously the time of the year. Now it's moved a little bit earlier. I think maybe there's a little bit more kind of interest around it potentially. But I think being at Oak Hill as well, where I think they've held the PGA. This is the fourth time, is it?
Fourth time. And actually, Oak Hill's the only venue, Ryan, in the United States has actually hosted all of the revolving men's majors. They've had US Opens, they've had US Amateurs, senior PGAs, senior US Opens, and the Ryder Cup back in 95, Europe won. So it has a great history to it. And actually, the golf course this year, Ryan, is a little bit different. the Donald Ross Golf Course opened back in 1926, but it has, as many of the championship courses in America were in the kind of middle part of the 20th century, they were kind of doctored up to kind of USGA standards, where they just kind of manipulated them and made them probably less interesting as a result of that. But the golf course in the last couple of years has actually been taken back to the kind of more of the original design that would have been back in the day. So it gives them more pin positions, a little bit more adaptability. So it should make, I think, an interesting test. So it's a very, very solid golf course with, you know, a great deal of history to it.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit more about the golf course, because, you know, in doing a little bit of reading around this, I saw that Ben Hogan described it as the toughest opening test in championship golf, the first tee shot at Oak Hill. It has to be said, there are two courses at Oak Hill.
Yeah.
The East is the one that has held all these tournaments. The West, apparently, a far more playable golf course and one that's kind of a little bit more fun, I suppose, to play rather than getting beaten up around the East course. And particularly the closing three holes at, you know, three par fours at 458, 502, and 497 yards.
Yeah.
They're long. So they're going to be a real test for the players to close out their round. And, you know, that going back to what I said before, it's a par 70, and, you know, it can be 7,300 yards par 70, which is that's pretty long, isn't it?
It's pretty long, and I think it's not just that, it's also the fact that the golf course demands precision. I see the greens have that Donald Ross style of being upturned a little bit. They're raised off the surface of the ground, so you can't run the ball in, if you like. You have to hit proper golf shots to get there. And remember Sean McKeel, the shot he hit into the last hole to win that championship back in 2003, which is one of the great shots in the history of this event.
Clutch under pressure. Was pretty close to.
Yeah, Chad Campbell finished second. Yeah,
was it? Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it was. He is a great iron player too. So I think it's one of those golf courses that I think it's very much in a kind of an iron player's course. And I think we're talking about kind of contenders this week. I think those are the players that you're looking at, the guys who can, you know, get the ball close, get it on the right side of the hole, because some of the pin positions will be kind of on shelves, on undulations. The greens are quite quick. I don't know how quick they're going to be. I say they can be quite adaptable with the setup, but the PGA of America doesn't tend to be quite as severe as the USGA tend to be with their course setups. So it should be relatively playable, and I think the weather forecast is relatively decent too, as far as I can tell. So I think it should be, you know, yes, it's a tough course, you know, demands a kind of stout finish, and you know, you have to play really well to win here, obviously. And but I think there'll be some decent scores in there too. I think the winning score will probably be kind of maybe high single figures under par, say 8, 9, 10 maybe at most. And that's probably a good target to get to. But yeah, it's kind of a quintessential American championship course. And, you know, that's not everyone's cup of tea at times. Maybe you think, well, we see too many of these every year because, again, we have three of the majors in America every year, so that's a bit one-dimensional. But I think this is one of the better ones. And, again, it should deliver a very fine week. And, say, it's golf course that has a great history to it. I've watched the highlights of the 95 Ryder Cup that was there, where you had Howard Clark making the hole-in-one. When it was a very experienced European team that won there. A lot of guys who are right at the end, like Sam Torrance.
To be honest, it was actually on...
Great.
Weirdly, it was on Sky the other day when I was sat doing some work in the clubhouse, and it was on in the background, and I watched a bit of it. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, you watch it back, and you can watch it back. And oddly enough, I was very young back then, Ryan, but what you noticed back then was somehow Andrew Castle's hosting the golf in Sky back in the 90s before he became a mediocre tennis commentator. I mean, but that's you know, wow. Neither here nor there. But yeah, it's a venue people will recognise, and I see an event that perhaps doesn't quite have the allure or the iconic nature of obviously the Opens or the Masters. But to me, it kind of strips away the pretentiousness a little bit. We don't have the incessant chatter about, you know, sandwiches and magnolia lanes and trees and flowers and all that rubbish you get at the Masters. A bit more, a bit less pretentious. Well, yeah, I can't be doing with all the sandwich chat at the Masters every year, right?
I would love to go. I really would.
I'd love to go, but all the egg salad stuff, pimento cheese. Oh no, 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 no.
No.
They talk about traditions and all that stuff, green jackets. Oh, no. to me, it's right, more of a solid championship.
Let's agree to disagree on that one. And let's try and find something we agree on in who's going to win.
Well, here's,
all right?
So here's a question for you. So who do you think, well, actually, Ryan, in your time watching golf then, as I said, the PGA Championship is not one of those events that perhaps jumps immediately to mind for delivering unforgettable moments. But what are some of the PGAs that you've seen that stick in your head?
Early on, I think I remember Daly winning it.
Back in 91, yeah. Amazing story.
Cool. I mean, I was only like, how old would I have been then? 6 years old. But I just remember him, obviously, with his mullet and winning that. And everyone just thinking he was unbelievable because he was just ripping it everywhere.
Mm,
and he just kind of took on the golf course and tried to overpower it. And I vaguely remember that, really. But I mean, it's more obviously the biggest one for me would be when it was almost like a boxing match watching Tiger Woods and Bob May basically slug
back
it
in
out.
2000, yeah.
What a tournament that was. Bob May must still every day wake up thinking, how the hell have I not won that golf tournament? Because he literally threw everything at Tiger, bar it, beating him to death with his golf clubs, I think, and Tiger found a way of beating him. It was just that time when Tiger was pretty much unbeatable, wasn't he? You know what I mean? He was just amazing. But yeah, that for me is the one that sticks in my head of watching them basically slug it out and hit unbelievable shot after unbelievable shot, and it was just amazing.
And as you say, that came after Tiger winning the Open and the US Open by a mile.
Yeah.
In the weeks preceding that, and looking, just unstoppable. And it's interesting where, when you look back at the game at around that time, where a lot of the guys who kind of challenged Tiger in the majors or even beat him were actually guys you wouldn't have expected. It's almost like the players, the likes of Els or Mickelson or Davis Love or whoever it was, David Duval back in the day, around, they almost kind of, they couldn't quite mentally meet Tiger on the same level, whereas the guys like Bob May or Rich Beam, those guys had nothing to lose, and they were just like, "Yeah, I'm going for it." And they often, found a way to kind of get the better of Tiger, even just or push him all the way. Guys you wouldn't have expected. And you mentioned kind of a boxing match, Ryan, and one PGA that sticks in my head is kind of that ilk as well. Was 2008 when Harrington beat Garcia down the stretch, Oakland Hills.
Yeah,
which was an amazing finish. The two of them going kind of going head to head, and I've never seen anyone look more focused than Padraig Harrington did that day. I mean, honestly, he looked like he was like in a trance almost. His eyes were just like laser focused.
You can see he is quite an intense guy when he gets a chance, isn't he?
He fancies it, doesn't he? He's I'm in a situation. He's going to embrace it and get the absolute most out of his game. And he just willed the ball into the hole and willed the ball into the green. It was amazing to watch the two of them going back and forth for the theatre, especially given the previous year at Carnoustie when Harrington had beaten Garcia in the playoff there to win the Open for the first time.
Yeah.
So there was kind of that undercurrent of these guys don't necessarily like each other as well. A bit of needle there, if you like. And they have that element to it as well, on top of the fact that they were just two great players going at it, hitting shot after shot after shot. It was fantastic. And I always remember, watching it on Sky, and it was Butch Harmon who was almost literally squealing with joy at how good it was at one point. He was like, "Look at this golf, Ewan. This is unbelievable." And it was, That's one PGA that always sticks out in my head because, in so many ways, it's funny because the PGA Championship back in the day was a match play event. And the two stories we've kind of related to there, Ryan, you with Bob May and Tiger, and myself with Sergio and Padraig Harrington, was those two situations were almost match play in themselves. So it kind of maybe underlines that sometimes stroke play becomes most interesting when it effectively is match play.
Yeah, indeed. It is, yeah. I mean, that when you've got two guys just kind of blow for blow and again, it's not the PGA, but when we remember that Open where Stenson won round Troon, I mean, it was very much like that as well.
Absolutely.
Even though there were other people involved, obviously, but they're the ones that we kind of remember and
you know, when Sergio won the Masters, him and Rose were kind of going at it quite well, weren't they? And yeah, it was just, yeah, I mean, we do like that. As much as there are so many other players in the field, once it gets narrowed down on a Sunday, it is great to see 2, 3, 4 people in the mix and sort of really, really going for it and seeing who's got the, you know, who's got the form and who's got the kind of mental strength to win, I suppose. So
it's funny because you mentioned obviously the Stenson Mickelson one at Troon, and it's one of those kind of pub quiz questions is who finished third? It was JB Holmes.
Was it? Oh my God.
And people wouldn't remember. It's a bit like when 77 at Turnberry, when it was Watson and Nicholas, the famous duel in the sun. It was Hubert Green who finished third.
Oh, was it?
It's like, yeah, he finished like 10 shots back. And he wasn't in the conversation, but he finished third.
I remember Finau and Beef doing quite well at Troon, but I don't know where that's.
Well, I mean, yeah, because actually that year was when Beef, you know, Andrew Johnston, when he actually kind of became prominent. He finished fourth or fifth. He was right up there, and he obviously became the crowd favourite and got a lot of attention from that. So yeah, there was kind of those guys are kind of playing in a different event almost. It was remarkable to watch,
yeah,
and that is still one of the, you know, absolute best majors of all time because of the head-to-head battle and the quality of the golf that they played. But of course, it's a different event. And the question is, this week, Ryan, of course, so many of the great players right now are obviously playing really, really well. I mean, obviously, you know, Ram and Scheffler, perhaps most of all, could we see those two going head-to-head? Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, it would. I mean, you'd be hard pushed to bet on anyone else than those two because I think they are the standout two players in the world, aren't they, at the moment?
Yes.
But, you know, going back to what you were saying before about it being an iron players golf course, I think that also brings a few guys. I mean, Tommy Fleetwood springs to mind when you talk about iron players, really. And maybe Matt Fitzpatrick as well. Mm-hmm. That they would be, and Hatton, as we've already said, is a well, and certainly last week the way he hit his irons was flawless at times, mm-hmm. really, and that those three for me, I don't know whether purely because they're all British, but Hovland would be another one. He's very, very good iron player, but
mm-hmm.
I think I'd love Spieth to win. I really would, and kind of complete that career grand slam, but I just don't know whether he's good enough off the tee. That's my question.
Yeah, I mean, I think on this particular golf course, obviously where there is tightness, there is rough, there are trees, you do just kind of think with Spieth that while he might get himself into contention, there's always going to be that, you know, those one or two shots that just cost him at the wrong time. You even see it at Augusta, you know, he still plays well there, but also one or two shots just kind of makes a double bogey out of nowhere, and it's hard to recover from that. But yeah, I think the guys you mentioned there, Ryan, especially the English guys, you know, I think Tyrrell Hatton has so much ability. He's playing really well this year, and he'll play great at the Players' Championship. You play well there, you can play well anywhere. And I think he's definitely a possible contender. There's always that kind of question mark about the temperament and what he's going to do and how, if can he handle the pressure of a major championship. But you know, I think he'll put himself in that position, and you do it often enough, and eventually, surely, it will fall your way. And I think they're great iron players. You also have the likes of Xander Schauffele and, you know, even Patrick Cantlay, even though that might make it the most boring event of all time if he was to win it. He's a very good golfer, despite being, you know, about as interesting as the seat I'm sitting on right now. No offence to the seat. And but yeah, I think some of the great players are playing well. And one guy we haven't mentioned yet, actually, there's kind of two players that we haven't really touched on, and I think they're both interesting stories for different reasons, and one of them is Brooks Koepka, who of course we saw do so well at the Masters and kind of proved to everyone, if not himself, that he's still a major contender.
He
coming in here,
the next person I mentioned, if I'm honest, and yeah, yeah. I mean, he's, I wouldn't say he's gone under the radar, has he, because he's won majors before, but I mean, no one was expecting him to do anything at the Masters, I don't think. I think the Full Swing documentary kind of made a lot of people doubt him as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he was very, very impressive. But for Rahm just being unbelievable,
yes,
I think he would have a green jacket. So
yeah,
it was very, very good. And I don't know whether this is the other person you were going to mention, but Dustin Johnson was the other one I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
So
he's obviously won last week on LIV, which we didn't really talk about, but you know, whatever people think out there, he's still won a golf tournament against some of the best players in the world. Whether you think they are or not, they are, in my opinion. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he is never someone you can count out, because off the tee, he's when he gets it right, my God, is he good. And he hits it a long way, as we all know. He pitches it well, he puts really nicely, and he's got a good iron game. So, yeah, he's got a very, very good chance.
he's going to win then, apparently.
PGA Championship. But the other one for me would be Cameron Smith as well. I mean, I think he shot 62 in the last round in the LIV event, 9 under par, which is impressive, no matter if you're playing your local municipal or a PGA Tour or LIV venue. 62 is a hell of a score. And we all saw last year at St Andrews just how good he is. So, yeah, I mean, that for me, as much as, you know, there might be a lot of people out there that don't want someone from LIV to win a major, I think either of those three for me would still be a very worthy and fantastic winner. I'd love to see any of them win it, to be honest.
Well, I mean, I think the question with Dustin Johnson is can he emulate Koepka, where Koepka obviously won the LIV event before the Masters in Orlando week before, and he carried that form into Augusta and obviously played fantastically. Can Johnson do the same here? You carry the form from last week into this week, you know, the winning feeling, the shooting, you know, low rounds of golf, coming into a major venue. He absolutely can. I think Cameron Smith's the one sort of player who would be kind of waiting for the real Cam Smith to sort of stand up again, where he has been a little bit underwhelming, a little bit in his LIV events, as far as I can see, over the past sort of 6 months or so, compared to how he was, obviously, going back a year ago, where he was unbelievable last year all across the game, you know, winning the Players, winning the Open, winning everywhere. So can he still be that player? And he's certainly capable of it. So yeah, I think those three guys are absolutely contenders. If I was to pick one of the three, it would be Brooks Koepka. I just think he's got just some kind of innate ability to elevate his game in the biggest stages. He has that kind of rare gift, and we kind of, you know, maybe it's because of him, the way he is, and maybe people don't find him particularly engaging or a warm personality, but you kind of forget how good he was at that time, winning those four majors in quick succession, including two PGAs. So he's done it before, and there's no reason why he can't win it again. So if there was a LIV player, and there's 18 of them in the field, I believe, that was going to win, then I think it's going to be Brooks Koepka. But the question is, as well, talking about LIV players, Ryan, not to kind of make it a full LIV on show here, but, you know, Phil Mickelson, of course, you know, rolled back the years at Augusta.
Absolutely, yeah.
Unbelievable performance, so it came from nowhere. And of course, coming to here, Ryan, you remember, 2 years ago, he won the PGA at Kiwa Island, becoming the oldest major winner ever. Unbelievable performance, just stratospheric achievement. He didn't play in last year's PGA, so surely he must feel this week kind of like the defending champion.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I mean, to be honest, he's not. I didn't even think about him, but particularly the performance he put in at the Masters, and you know, he has had a couple of good rounds on LIV as well. I think he's, you know, by his own admission, getting back to where he wants to be, and I think he's found his speed again, and he's hitting the ball a decent distance. And I mean, he's a prolific winner, so you can't ever count him out, I don't think.
No, absolutely. But I think we should mention one other player before we kind of wrap it up, Ryan. And it's probably Rory McIlroy, I would say, who's obviously kind of in a bit of a strange position right now, where he was looking obviously fantastic end of last year. He was strutting his stuff. He was looking imperious. Started the year well, won in Dubai, came to Augusta, obviously just really struggled at Augusta. Missed a cut, came back at the Wells Fargo. He finished, I think, 15 shots behind the winner. He's looked a bit kind of out of sorts off the golf course, not quite feeling himself. 9 years since he won a major, which was a PGA back in 2014. Mm-hmm. You know, is there a chance, Ryan, in your mind, that the real Rory might stand up this week or not?
I hope so, because I think he's got all of the qualities that we've just been outlining that you need to win around this golf course. He hits it a long way. He's a fantastic iron player. There's always a little bit of a question mark about his putting sometimes, and I think it's kind of not very fair, because I think he just hits it so good from tee to green that he's probably going to have more putts than a lot of people. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those. So
yeah,
I mean, he's obviously he's a multiple major winner, so he's got chance of winning, and he's, you know, former world number one, and as you know, as well as close to now as probably was he over Christmas? Was he world number one?
So it's not. Yes, yeah, he was before the great rise of a Ram.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a long time ago that he was the best player in the world. So it can't be, you know, it can't be far from his mind that he can win an event like this. And I think if it. I don't know what the rough's like around there. That's the thing. But, I mean, he's a great driver. The golf ball hits it very straight, great with his irons. And if he has a week where he puts nicely, you know, he's going to be very tough to beat, isn't he?
So. I think so. But, again, we obviously make the case for so many players. And that's what I think this week is, you know, while the PGA doesn't always get the sort of pre-tournament buzz that the other majors get, I actually think when you're going to get into it, and get into the weekend, you actually think, well, this is actually pretty good. And I think this week will actually be one of those as well, where I think the cream will rise to the top, and I think it will be a compelling leaderboard going into Sunday, and well, hopefully a great finish. Question.
Do you think we're going to see maybe a surprise winner or not? Do you think it's going to be?
Because it's funny because you think back at the majors over the last few years, there's no one really that stands out as being a real outside winner. We've tended to see guys that you think, okay, I can see that happening. I suppose the last outside winner, if you like, was probably Phil Mickelson 2 years ago, who came from nowhere to win that PGA. Other than that, I think, generally speaking, guys who are probably in the top 20 on the favourites list have probably won all the majors. So I'd be surprised if an outsider won it, but obviously it can happen, and it depends what you define as being an outsider or not. You know, I'm going to declare my pick to win, Ryan, if you're ready for this moment.
Yeah, let's go for it. Well, yeah, are we just picking one player? Yeah.
Well, technically, you are the main host, so it's your rules.
No, I like that. I like that. I like narrowing it down. So yeah, okay, you go for one, and I'll go for one.
I'm going to pick Tony Finau to win the PGA Championship.
Are you? Wow.
Yes. I think first of all, I think it'd be a really popular win. Everyone likes Tony Finau. Unbelievable player. Obviously, won recently in Mexico, beating John Rahm out there. Obviously, he's someone who has so much power. Can drive it straight, very good with his irons, has all the tools in the game, and I think he's someone who has just all the ingredients to be a major champion. And I think if he was a major champion, it would be maybe the opening of the floodgates and all that kind of thing. So I would love, if in terms of a player I would like to see win it, and obviously no kind of rooting from the press box and all that sort of thing, but I would really like to see Tony Finau win a major championship. And I think this could be the week. And I think the fans at Rochester in New York State, you're generally speaking quite lively. I think they get really behind them, and I think it would be I think they'd be pretty cool scene to see happen. So hopefully, or you know, potentially, it'd be nice to see it become a reality. I think.
I'd agree. I mean, I would love to see him win a major as well, and you know, just seems like the nicest guy ever. So yeah, I'd love to. But my pick is Brooks Koepka.
Oh,
I'm going to go with Brooks. I mean, it's Rahm is probably my pick, but I would just think he's just too easy to pick, isn't he? So I wanted to go for somebody else. So Koepka's my man.
And if you were to pick one English, UK, European player, who would it be?
I would go with Tyrrell Hatton.
Well, he would be, I'm going to go for the other one then. I'm going to say Tommy Fleetwood. I think Tommy Fleetwood obviously hasn't won in America yet, but playing well, amazing iron player. He's come here early and practiced over the weekend, I believe. So he's getting warmed up for this major. And again, talk about nice guys winning. I'd love to see Tommy Fleetwood win the PGA as well. So
yes, I think that'd be wonderful.
I'm so warm, lovely and friendly that I want the nice guys to win. You want all these kind of hardened brutes to win, Ryan. That's the difference between us. I want the nice guys to win.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we're only a few days away now from the first tee shot being struck on the toughest opening test in championship golf.
Yes.
As Ben Hogan said. But yeah, I mean, whatever happens, it promises to be a fantastic event. And Oak Hill is going to, you know, again, prove a very worthy host of this championship. So, Kieran, thank you very much for spending some time with us this week.
My pleasure.
I can't remember whether Matt's back next week or not. But if he's not, would you come back?
I'll consider
even
it.
Even if he is, do you want to come back?
Well, only if Tony Finau wins, I'll come back then.
Okay, fine. Right, well, yeah, exactly. Well, that'll be it then. So if Finau wins, you're definitely coming back.
I'm definitely back, yes.
And what does the next 7 days look like for you, Kieran? What are you up to?
Well, I'm going to be, you know, basically preparing for the PGA Championship. Lots of content on Golf Shake, you know, a lot of great stuff going out there. Various newsletters going out by the emails. A lot of stuff on social media. And basically, when Thursday afternoon comes around, Ryan, I'm going to be parked and watching the golf because, You know, while much of professional golf in the past couple of years has rather irritated me and kind of I found it quite off-putting, actually, a lot of the politics and a lot of the antics and a lot of the shenanigans that have been going on. And the majors, though, they still draw me in. And I think, especially these days, you have all the best players in one place together. And it's actually made the majors, and maybe even more so the PGA from where it was before, they feel bigger than what they did before, because you're now having the best players, wherever they play in the world, in one place. And to me, that as a golf viewer is the ultimate. So the majors feel even bigger than they did before. And I've always loved them. And for me, it'll be appointment viewing all 4 days. And I can't wait to see what happens. Who lifts that massive, monumental Wanamaker trophy?
Yes, indeed. And that was something I was going to say earlier. I think it's probably the coolest trophy as well. It's huge. It's almost
But here's the thing, though, because you know, who has a big enough mantelpiece for that, though?
Well, yeah, nobody. Probably.
So,
maybe Tiger, because he's got four. So,
exactly. You have to like build another wing to your house to accommodate that thing. Huge.
Well, we'll see what happens later on this week. Yes. But yeah, thank you again, Kieran.
Thank you.
And a reminder to all of you out there, if you haven't already done so, subscribe to the Golf Shit YouTube channel. You can also follow us on all the normal social media platforms. We're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and you can find us quite easily on there. So keep watching our content to help you play more and play better. We'll speak to you all next week.